So this morning, we're going to talk about keeping kids safe on the internet. Every day there's a new piece on the news about kids being stalked on the internet or having trouble with cyberbullying or sexting, as it's called, sending pictures, inappropriate pictures to one another through their cell phones. So the whole issue of children in the internet is just fraught with potential problems and difficulty. So we're going to talk about that this morning. We welcome your input, and we're going to have a podcast shortly from one of the experts in the field, John Sheehan, who's with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Before we do that, let's just have a quick check of the weather this morning. If you've been outside, you know it's pretty chilly out. Right now it's 34 degrees in Charlottesville. It's sunny. The winds are calm. It's going to get probably no warmer than 55 today, although it will be sunny throughout the day, and we're not looking for any precipitation today. But I think late fall and early winter is upon us. I think our extended Indian summer is come and gone. So 34 degrees in Charlottesville this morning. So bundle up before you go out. So what about keeping kids safe on the internet? A recent study suggested that 20% of kids, that would be mostly adolescents, have encountered either hateful or harassing or bullying messages on the internet. Social media has really created a platform for the so-called cyberbullying, and it's been a serious problem for many kids. We've had some reports of suicide by kids who were cyberbullied. So that's a part of the problem with the internet. We also have issues with kids looking at pornography on the internet, which is unfortunately is easily accessible to them. Most kids are fairly computer savvy and don't have a great deal of difficulty finding pornographic material. There are also people that are out there cruising, if you will, for kids, for young people, to engage them. There are various hate groups. We just heard this week that one of the individuals in the shooting in California allegedly had pledged their loyalty to ISIS through a Facebook page run by that organization. So there's all kinds of opportunity for problems and difficulties online. As much as a blessing as the internet is, it's also can be quite a curse. So where do we start? Well, you know, I always say to parents again and again, you need to begin with being involved in your child's world on the internet and on the cell phone. We're not asking that you look over their shoulder constantly, but you need to know what they're doing, where they're going, what sites they're checking out, who they're talking to, what are they saying. Kids live so much on social media these days that it's really important that parents keep abreast of that as best they could, because without the supervision, there's a high probability that they're going to get into something that's inappropriate. Most kids have computers in their rooms now, certainly in many homes, and that can be problematic. You either need to monitor what's going on there or keep the computer in a family space somewhere other than where the kid has privacy to stay on the computer. You need to have clear rules. A lot of parents are reluctant to do this, but I think it's very important to sit down and talk to your kids about when they can be on, for how long they can be on, what sites they can visit, what sites they can't visit, how they can use Facebook, how they can use Twitter. You need to have clear house rules for kids in terms of computer usage, and you need to have the threat of being not allowed to use the computer if the rules are violated for some period of time. One of the critical things is making sure that kids protect their own privacy. This is important to talk about. You'll hear Mr. Sheehan talk about this in a few minutes, but you know, to never just admonish them to never give their name, their phone number, email address, physical address, their school, a picture, passwords, anything of that sort to someone on the internet, especially if it's not someone they know, especially if it's not someone within their community or their social circle. Remind them never to open emails from people they don't know. Again, this gets into both inappropriate inquiries for the kid, but also the potential for viruses and malware and other such things. To ignore hurtful or disturbing messages, don't get caught up in the cyberbullying cycle, and certainly not to meet anyone, not to get together with anyone they've met online or someone that's attempted to solicit them online. During my working days, I had a number of cases of men who had basically trolled the internet for young women and attempted to set up meetings with them. So this is a very real problem. It's a very important situation for them to know about. So let's listen to the podcast from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. They really are the premier agency in this area, and then we'll come back and have some further comments after the podcast. So please stay with us. You're listening to the Mind and Heart Show on WPVC 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I'm Dr. Jeffrey Frazier, your host, and we will be back with you after the podcast. Thank you.
This is the Internet Safety Podcast. And now your host, Dr. Charles Knutson.
Welcome to the Internet Safety Podcast. This is your host, Charles Knutson, and I'm very pleased today to have on the program John Sheehan, who is the Executive Director of the Exploited Children Division of the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. John, welcome to the program.
Hello. Greetings. Thanks for having me.
You bet. And I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to spend a few minutes with us. I have a couple of questions that I was just really intrigued by. You know, the center, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children has been around since 1984. So, I mean, it really a long time, right? Certainly yeah. At internet speed, it has been around a long time. How long have you been with the center?
So I joined the center back in 1999. Really, from an internet safety perspective, it was kind of around the time where Web 1.0, a lot where it was, you know, content being pushed to you, you know, a lot of the CNN, Web, right. Washington Post, that kind of stuff. It was really kind of in that realm, and social networking didn't exist. The chat rooms had just started to come out. So I've been with the center for about 12 years now, and certainly have been able to watch this issue, the internet, and everything kind of evolve and progress into where we are today.
And it is really an amazing dramatic shift, right? I mean, I was involved in technology back in the 80s, you know, doing actual software companies back when, you know, it was just the PC revolution. And I mean, it really is an amazing shift. Even if, you know, you go back to the web kind of shows up in the mid-90s, right? A little early 90s as a spec and as a phenomenon kind of bursts on the scene around 95 or so, right? What would you say is the biggest thing? Obviously, you mentioned the collaborative web there was nothing like that. You know, the closest you had to a collaborative web back then was making your own website to, again, do this kind of point to multipoint broadcast, right? And it was all just a repeat of the broadcast model. And it's a really different world now.
Yeah, it certainly has. And I think in a lot of ways, you know, the internet has evolved into such a wonderful tool. It's a fantastic thing. And when I first had started, I think if you wanted to go do different things on the internet, you had to go different areas. There wasn't a one-stop shop. If you look at a lot of the social media, social networking sites now, they have all of those early platforms all rolled up into one. So if you wanted to email back in the day, you'd have to go to Hotmail and go do your email. And if you wanted to go chat with people, you'd have to go into the old, you know, AOL chats or Yahoo chats, which still exist today. But right. Now you can go into like a Facebook and you can share videos, you can watch videos, you can, you know, you post your messages, you can email, you can video chat. It's all kind of incorporated into one spot. So all the great ideas kind of in the past have merged into one place, which are fantastic. But from a child safety perspective, it also kind of increases the dangers in certain areas where kids tend to migrate and want to hang out.
Yeah, no question. And, you know, I mean, back in the, I remember back in, again, kind of mid-90s, you know, AOL sort of showed up. The notion of a portal, I think the idea was right. I think that it was very, very early. There wasn't the same kind of critical mass. And today, really, I think Facebook kind of took over that role. I remember my own adult children, you know, college-age kids, you know, just like, I don't see you on chat anymore. And for me, that was like MSN Messenger, you know, or AOL Instant Messenger or something. They're like, yeah, I'm pretty much only chat on Facebook now, you know, because their whole world had just kind of migrated in there, right? And where do you see the greatest dangers? I know you're involved, you know, you're a founding member of the Financial Coalition Against Child Pornography, and clearly there's a risk there. I mean, that's, you know, it's one of the interesting things. As I talk to a lot of people, there are issues that people might debate, you know, what is pornography, or what would you consider inappropriate, or what online behaviors for children. You know, there's a lot of parental latitude, and people bring different values, you know, et cetera. And I have mine and you have yours. You start talking about child pornography, and then this becomes the big no-brainer, right? And it's in some respects, it's refreshing enough that I think that we universally agree that this is a really, really critical problem and just incredible damage to the kids that wind up victims of this.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the one great thing about this issue. When you're talking about child pornography, it's not protected speech here in the United States.
That's right.
It's completely illegal, you know. So you've got industry who are doing more than they ever have. If you look back over the past 10 years, there are a number of companies who are proactively monitoring and making sure that content stays off of their network.
Really,
law enforcement? Yeah, absolutely. Law enforcement's geared with resources, more resources than they've ever had. Of course, they need more because, you know, as the internet expands, there's a lot of content that becomes traded. When you're looking at it from a victim's perspective, you know, unfortunately, when those images are created, whether it's at the hands of an abuser or someone is actually, you know, self-producing that content,
right,
when it gets out there, you know, there's people that have a sexual interest in children. They collect that content, they redistribute it, not just on the World Wide Web, but in the chat rooms and news groups, out there in peer-to-peer. It's incredibly difficult to get an image back once it's distributed, but we're working with industry on a number of voluntary initiatives where we here at the center actually arm them with very specific hash values where they can proactively scan their networks to make sure that those graphic images of children being raped and abused are removed. They remove them, and by law, they actually report them into the cyber tip line. There's a law in the books. It's 18 United States Code 2258A. It requires U.S.-based companies, if they become aware of child pornography on their network, they report it into the cyber tip line. Yep, they have to report it, and then we in turn provide it to law enforcement. Out here in Alexandria, we have a very strong representation of federal law enforcement in our building, the FBI, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. There's U.S. Postal Inspectors, the Marshals. They have access to all this information that comes in. They investigate those tips, and a lot of times it's the reports from the companies where they can identify that screen name or email address that posted the pictures. They can provide the pictures in question as well as jurisdictional information. They know the IP address from where the pictures were posted. They give that date and time, enough for law enforcement to send legal process, of course, you know, the judicial system following that entire flow, and they can make some really good cases from people that need to be found, because obviously if you're looking at sexually abusive images of children, it's only a matter of time till you're going to want to act upon those thoughts and those urges.
Can I beat on a big pet peeve, and that is the Supreme Court ruling with respect to virtual child pornography?
I'm gonna
guess that we're probably on the same page on this. My big concern is whether or not a child is victimized by the creation of a piece of child pornography, right? You photoshopped stuff together, you've done whatever, and an actual child was not harmed or abused in the making of that. You're still feeding an appetite, right? You're still feeding a system.
Certainly, yeah. I mean, if you think of the individual who's viewing those pictures and what they believe it to be, and they're still getting sexual gratification. And that was a major challenge. You know, back in 2002, the Ashcroft versus Free Speech Coalition decision, it put the burden of proof on those prosecutors to prove that the children depicted in those images were, in fact, real victims.
Right, this is the point, right? I mean, because in some of those cases, they were not. It was virtual. It was digital, Photoshop or whatever.
review. And so we're able to produce a report out of those 10,000 images, how many are children who have been identified already. There's a law enforcement officer out there that's willing to testify that it is, in fact, a real child. And then we're going to focus in on those content to try and locate new victims that haven't been identified yet.
Right.
So while there are a number of challenges from that ruling, there are some good things that have come out of it because of that as well.
Right. Well, you know, and I think about that. I guess on the one hand we could say that job, but I view it more as really a service to humanity. But just absolutely brutal duty to have to deal in that space, you know. And I just think that, you know, that you and the people that work with you in that space, I just view you as heroes. I mean, you're on the front line. There's a tremendous amount of vulnerability for the people having to just deal with that stuff, you know. And you know, and I just have such a high respect, you know, for the job you're doing, for the job that your people do, you know, for the attorneys general around the country. I mean, there are just so many people that are really engaged in this battle to try to protect our children, you know, from these just really unspeakable crimes, and the damage so deep and so pervasive and you know, generationally damaging. You know, these kids, you know, come out and struggle as parents, and their whole lives are altered by that, you know, unspeakably selfish act by the perpetrator. And I just want to, you know, John, just, you know, kind of congratulate, I guess, and you know, as a dad, as a grandpa I am now, you know, just thank you for that work. It's just so important.
Well, thank you. I mean, it is an incredibly, it's a challenging job, it mentally challenging. And certainly, you know, if you had asked me coming out of the university and starting to work at the center, if I thought this is where my career path was going to take, never would have guessed it. Didn't even know they had this type of division. And you know, there's a rigorous screening process for new applicants that come through, the ones that we hire. It's actually a three-round process, which towards the later end, we make sure they truly understand what they're going to get into, because while it is incredibly challenging to have to view, you know, the sheer volume of content that comes through on a daily basis, it's actually quite rewarding as well, knowing that we are changing and making a difference in the lives of kids all around the world that will never even meet, and for those that ever make their way into Alexandria, Virginia, to our headquarters and come through on a tour. And when you come and you hit our floor, the Exploited Child Division, there's cork boards everywhere. There are pictures of offenders that have been arrested through the work of either the cyber tip line or the identification program. So it's really the fuel for the fire. It's why people are here. And really, there are employees here that have been here, you know, 5, 10, 15, some even 20 years with the center. And it's really the mission and what we're able to do that they really get behind. And it's fantastic work.
That's right. And for the listeners, cybertipline.com is the website for the cyber tip line.
Absolutely.
You've also got, let me see, the main site for the center is Missing Kids.
Yeah, www.missingkids.com is the main site for the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. You have the ability to search by state, look at photos of missing children. There's a lot of resources related to articles and safety information, as well as the ability to make reports related to child sexual exploitation.
And then we've also got, I'm on a roll now, I guess, on some web addresses to give to the listeners. But we've also got the NetSmarts site, and that's NetSmarts.org. And I just want to say there are a number of videos on the NetSmarts site. And if the listeners just go to NetSmarts.org, in particular the one, so I have a bunch of teenagers at my house. I have 10 kids, and the listeners already know that, which you know, it's a party every night at my house, but I currently have 5 teenagers at my house. I have actually used, in the past, over the last several years, in fact, I've grabbed, video content from that site. There's a section entitled, Real Life Stories. I think for me, as a father of teenagers, you know, it's all really incredibly well produced content. But there's a few that deal with, you know, girls, for example, who met somebody online and wound up in a, you know, kind of a runaway situation, really more than an abduction, really, at that point, more of a consensual runaway, right? And their lives are just altered and so moving. And I have played those videos for my kids in kind of a family council, like, okay, hey kids, I just want everybody to see this. And when you got a 14-year-old daughter that's on Facebook, I think it's really, really important for her to just sort of see, you know, we're not trying to go stranger danger, it's the boogeyman, and scare everybody away from technology. But that little bit of awareness that says, you know, not everybody is who you think they are. And even when you know who they are, you can't necessarily judge motivations and intentions. And, you know, you get friends of friends, right? You've controlled kind of their contacts, maybe. But they've got friends of friends that, you know, and you're looking on, you know, you're cruising around and seeing kind of who some of these folks are. And you're like, well, that looks a little unsavory over there on the edges of your friends list.
Yeah, there's a lot of good content on the NetSmarts.org site. We try to provide age-appropriate resources that can help teach children how to be safer on and offline. You mentioned the online victimization video, the real-life stories. There's also cyberbullying material that's there. We try and do a lot of videos and games. There's activity cards as well as presentations because, you know, being a nonprofit, 501c3, we don't have an unlimited budget to get around to all the different schools and law enforcement. But the idea is to train the trainers. And so if you can go onto that site, learn about it, take that information and empower, whether it's the school systems or as a law enforcement officer out there, doing you know, school resource presentations or to the public as a whole, take the material, you can use it and really help further the education component.
Yeah. And I just really highly recommend these materials. The Internet Safety Podcast endorses your materials, John. You know, and there's a section on, you know, NetSmart kids, ages 5 to 10, for teens, ages 8 to 13, Teens Talk Back, 8 to 17, just, you know, kind of age appropriate, but production quality, you know, frankly, very, very high and really professional and really moving. I mean, just really, I mean, I've watched some of those, especially the ones, there's one called Amy's Choice, another one called Julie's Journey. You know, and I got four daughters and, you know, boy, it just moves me to tears, you know, just because these are real stories.
And certainly we held a number of focus groups to try and figure out what is the best way to educate teenagers. Because like you mentioned, you kind of have to carve away the children and the teenagers when you're trying to talk internet safety. And really through the focus groups, we found that them hearing the true stories and what happens is the best way to connect. Because if it hasn't happened to them, most likely they know another student or a friend where something's going on and it sinks in. And it's a really good way to try and get the point across.
Well, and it is more and more pervasive. You know, we usually think of it as sort of internet safety, and I guess it is. But, you know, more and more it's your cell phone and it's text messaging and it's, you know, there's just so many angles. You know, it's hacking into somebody's World of Warcraft account, you know, and doing, you know, weird damaging things just by, you know, forms of cyberbullying and in all these sort of weird varieties. But our kids, for the most part, are experiencing that in, you know, or if, like you said, if they haven't experienced it themselves, they know somebody who has. And when I kind of am asked to
sexual exploitation.
Wow.
We started diving into some of those reports, trying to figure out, make sense of all the different things that are coming through. What we realized is that from one social networking provider, and it wasn't Facebook, it was a different one that's out there, it's very popular with teens and kids, more than 40,000 reports came in from that one provider related to teenagers who were using that service and were self-producing pornographic pictures, sending them to people online, and oftentimes they didn't know who they were. And we realized that parents need to know about these technologies. They need to make sure that these smartphones and what's connecting, you know, the webcams, you know, where are these devices, how are they being used, and making sure they're having those types of conversations with their kids so they truly understand, you know, you're taking that picture, you're doing that stuff, you might think it's a boyfriend or someone that's online that you've met and that you know well, but oftentimes people can really hide their identities and end up being someone completely different, and you don't even know what you're doing with some of those pictures.
Yeah, and for some reason, I have degrees in computer science, right? And as I like to say sometimes, I never had a graduate course on how to successfully navigate a social network or how to use text messaging on a cell phone. You know, I mean, the only thing my educational background gives me is a lack of fear of the technology. It's not like I know anything from any particular background. And what I think is the value of that message is that for the parents, you know, go do it. Go do what the kids are doing. Understand what their world is. Sometimes there's kind of a, there's a weird dynamic sometimes, and I see a lot of it, which is the parents kind of throwing up their hands and saying, you know, there's a computer involved. I'm just going to stop being a parent. You know, like when did it start being news that a kid online 16 hours a day without supervision was a bad idea?
Yeah. And I mean, I've talked to parents about this issue, and they, you know, some of their solution was, and they would tell me, I'm taking the keyboard to work with me, or I've got the modem, they can't get online. And I'm like, nah, that's not going to work, because they've got the cell phones, they're at school, they're at their friends' houses, they think they've got the solution to it, but that's really not the way to go.
Yeah, that's right. Or at least it's a stopgap. You know, I have on occasion taken the wireless keyboard into my bedroom at night, you know, just like out of front, like I gotta do something to pull the plug here, and at least temporarily. But the notion that I'm going to pull the plug entirely, it's a, you know, and boy, in my opinion, it's a false sense of security, you know, because I think all the parent really does in that situation is takes themselves out of the equation. The kid is going to be online. Even if you successfully barricade this kid in a bunker, you know, until they're 18, they're going to leave and go to college or leave right. The house and go work. And they're not going to be under mom and dad's control. And if they haven't figured out for themselves how to navigate that space intelligently, you know, in a sort of an emotionally safe, spiritually safe, physically safe kind of a way, you know, we're simply delaying this confrontation where they have to. And I think it's way better that they're learning about that in the home with mom and dad.
Absolutely, and that's why parents they need to learn about those technologies, and that way they can have the discussions and they can communicate with their children about those different devices.
Absolutely,
you know, taking the approach of, you know, grabbing the keyboard and ripping the modem out of the wall, it's only going to make the situation worse, because, you know, your teen's not going to speak up if something goes wrong, because they they already predict how you're going to react, and that's
absolutely
just not a very good way at all.
No, if they know that you come in and you say, Dad, I saw this pornography. You know, it just popped up, or I stumbled on this site, or I did a Google search, or whatever, right? And then you're like, oh, I just knew it, you know, that's it, you know.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what does Junior go? You know, Junior's like telling the little brother, don't say anything to mom or dad.
Yep, don't say a word. They're going to take the computer away. I'll never be online again.
That's right. And then suddenly, you know, and it's way better when you've got a kid who comes in and says, hey, Dad, I just saw this stuff, you know, and I don't know, it doesn't seem appropriate. Can you come help me? Okay, because you've got a safe environment where they know that the plug's not going to get pulled, but they can kind of work through it together. So one question I had, John, too, was, you know, the Center for Missing and Exploited Children, it deals, you know, with the broad notion of missing children, exploited children. And then, of course, there's the notion of, you know, this coalition against child pornography. How much in 2012... how much of the, you know, let's call it the business, you know, or the issues that are dealt with by the Center for Missing and Exploited Children have their roots or their basis, I guess, in technology, in child pornography, or in sort of internet safety sorts of domains? And how much of it is just creepy stalker guy picks a kid up in a car on the street, you know, the kind of dangers that existed when I was a kid?
Well, it's an interesting question, and so the cyber tip line, it's been around since 1998, and there's been more than 1.3 million reports into the tip line since then. The vast majority of those are related to child pornography, and it's child pornography on the internet. We work with a variety of different companies. There's actually a technology coalition that we are a part of, and you've got the major brands, you know, GoDaddy, AOL, Yahoo, Facebook, Microsoft. They're all members of this technology coalition. And we're looking at ways to use technology to identify the images that are circulated online, to report and effectively, you know, provide law enforcement with reports for investigations. What we found in the center really doesn't use stranger danger type of terminology.
Right.
And I mentioned earlier our child victim identification program. It's been around since 2002, and its goal is to identify the children that are in those images. And what we realized is that there are there's about 4,300 children who are victims who have been identified, and there are hundreds, if not thousands, more that are out there that we're still looking for. But through that identification process, we're able to work with law enforcement to track down what's the relationship of the abuser to that child. So that person that produced those photographs, how did he know the kid, he or she? And what we found is that the vast majority of those individuals had legitimate access to the kids. It's not necessarily the media sensationalized case of the abduction off the street, stranger danger. It's someone that's either a family or a friend, could be a coach or a neighbor, someone that's in a position of trust that child knows. And it really curves and changes our safety messaging, and you know, for parents to make sure that they're aware and that they've got an open line of communication with their kids, so the kids will speak up and they'll say something. You know, of course, there is a percentage that through online victimization and online enticement and that angle, but you know, I think it's almost 80%. It's related to a person of trust and someone that a child would have known.
So I guess for parents, maybe the message would be because the majority, the vast majority of access to kids that's of an inappropriate nature is coming from a trusted adult, that educating that child becomes very, very important. And if you just simply play the stranger danger card, it doesn't equip them for the 80% of the time when there's victimization coming from a trusted individual, a teacher, coach, friend, neighbor, family member.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Communication is the number one tool, and that's why you need to be able to know about these technologies, know about the issues, so you can have the conversation. That way you can educate your child about things that are happening. When you think about the internet safety and this issue as a whole, you know, if you're one of those parents that says that your kid knows more about these technologies than you do, it's time to make a change, because you have to educate yourself so you can engage in those conversations, make sure they know it's okay to come to you and tell you that something happened, something went wrong, because there are case examples that we've had here at the center where, you know, something happened online, it was the enticement angle, and the child thought that they were talking to someone their own age, they took a picture and sent it, and before you know it, they're being extorted. Take more, or I'm going to send it to all your friends on your buddy list, or whatever it may be. They try and handle that situation because they know how mom and dad are going to react, and it goes in the wrong direction. So you need to educate yourself. AOL, Yahoo, Facebook, Microsoft, they're all members of this technology coalition, and we're looking at ways to use technology to identify the images that are circulated online, to report and effectively, you know, provide law enforcement with reports for investigations. What we found in the center really doesn't use stranger danger type of terminology.
Right.
And I mentioned earlier our child victim identification program. It's been around since 2002, and its goal is to identify the children that are in those images. And what we realized is that there are there's about 4,300 children who are victims who have been identified, and there are hundreds, if not thousands, more that are out there that we're still looking for. But through that identification process, we're able to work with law enforcement to track down what's the relationship of the abuser to that child. So that person that produced those photographs, how did he know the kid, he or she? And what we found is that the vast majority of those individuals had legitimate access to the kids. It's not necessarily the media sensationalized case of the abduction off the street, stranger danger. It's someone that's either a family or a friend, could be a coach or a neighbor, someone that's in a position of trust that child knows. And it really curves and changes our safety messaging, and you know, for parents to make sure that they're aware and that they've got an open line of communication with their kids, so the kids will speak up and they'll say something. You know, of course, there is a percentage that through online victimization and online enticement and that angle, but you know, I think it's almost 80%. It's related to a person of trust and someone that a child would have known.
So I guess for parents, maybe the message would be because the majority, the vast majority of access to kids that's of an inappropriate nature is coming from a trusted adult, that educating that child becomes very, very important. And if you just simply play the stranger danger card, it doesn't equip them for the 80% of the time when there's victimization coming from a trusted individual, a teacher, coach, friend, neighbor, family member.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Communication is the number one tool, and that's why you need to be able to know about these technologies, know about the issues, so you can have the conversation. That way you can educate your child about things that are happening. When you think about the internet safety and this issue as a whole, you know, if you're one of those parents that says that your kid knows more about these technologies than you do, it's time to make a change, because you have to educate yourself so you can engage in those conversations, make sure they know it's okay to come to you and tell you that something happened, something went wrong, because there are case examples that we've had here at the center where, you know, something happened online, it was the enticement angle, and the child thought that they were talking to someone their own age, they took a picture and sent it, and before you know it, they're being extorted. Take more, or I'm going to send it to all your friends on your buddy list, or whatever it may be. They try and handle that situation because they know how mom and dad are going to react, and it goes in the wrong direction. So you need to educate yourselves, engage your children. That way you empower them to speak up when things are going wrong. Too many children don't disclose abuse. And if they would speak up, we can stop that cycle. Find those abusers before they move on to other children.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, in my generation, and certainly in my parents' generation, you didn't talk about sexuality, you know, in the home. You know, I remember talking to my parents about, you know, they never, you know, my mom, you know, never had the conversation with her parents ever, you know. It was just like, you just didn't talk about it. And if you're not having in my view, if you're not having an honest and mature and, you know, and infused with your own values conversation with your kids about sexuality, about maturity, about growth, about love, about relationships, you know, that whole domain, because you get these kids are 14, 15, and, you know, their brain is just awash in all these mixed emotions and these experiences. And in those situations, there is it is relatively easy, in a sense, to manipulate them. And they're at a tremendous vulnerability. And I think we just have to be, you know, I don't know, bold enough, shameless enough as a parent to just say, hey, you know, let's talk about pornography. Let's talk about issues online. Let's talk about relationships. Let's talk about sexuality, you know, in its positive form. You know, if they don't understand that, they don't understand the other side of it either. And therefore, they don't know how to manage when they're being approached and someone's saying, send me a naked picture. I'm a total stranger, but, you know, take a picture of yourself, or do you have a webcam, or, you know, these kinds of issues. It has to be communication between the parents and the kids.
Absolutely, and I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, yeah, this is a lot different world we live in now than what we grew up in. And, you know, I think children are sexualized at a very early age nowadays through television and media. It's much different. I mean, you and I grew up in a world where parents would leave the keys in the car and the house was never locked. But really, to be a good parent, now you have to have those conversations so that they're armed with the information and know how to act.
Yeah, well, I think we don't have the luxury in this generation of not being connected ourselves, so that we are in a position to teach our kids and coach them and train them and be there with them. And the other thing I think is occasionally I'll talk to parents and the message is, well, I know my kids and my kids would never do that, you know, and there are really, and these are, and they are great kids, you know, but there's a world there, you know. Pornography is addictive. Certain kinds of online behaviors can be at least a tremendous draw, if not addictive. And these kids can very, very quickly be sucked into a bit of a virtual world where reality changes and shifts just a little bit in a way that's really not anticipatable by the parents because it's so far out of their experience.
Yep, absolutely. And I think if any listeners have information, you know, related to these types of incidents and situations, sometimes, you know, whether it's another schoolmate or something that's happening in the home, they can make reports online at cybertipline.com or our toll-free hotline, 1-800-THE-LOST. And we've got that's manned and staffed 24 hours a day, every day out of the year. We take these reports, we make them available to law enforcement. Oftentimes, a little tip from a member of the public ends out uncovering, you know, a huge case that ends out saving children, getting someone off the streets that's victimizing kids or teenagers. So, you know, members of the public have key information, and we just need to make sure that they know they can report that.
Right. And that was 1-800-THE-LOST.
Yep. THELOST. 5678. Yes.
All right. John, last thing you'd say, what would you leave them with as kind of a final message?
Well, I think first and foremost, the internet is a wonderful tool, and no one should walk away from this type of conversation thinking that they need to shut it off or go away from it. There's so many wonderful resources in it. We just need to recognize and be aware of the dangers. It's very easy to skip this conversation as a whole because it can be uncomfortable at times. But education is vital, whether it's in the school systems or within the church system. Youth need to hear about the internet, the dangers that are there, and to do so, parents, guardians, caregivers need to educate themselves. The center has a number of resources that are available, and they can find that at missingkids.com, and we're certainly here to help through the entire process.
John, I want to thank you, and once again, just such deep respect for what you guys are doing at the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. It's such a heavy responsibility, such a heavy duty, but such a such a benefit and a blessing to the kids that you're rescuing and the folks that you're helping to get off the street, get out of the lives of our children, you know, get them somewhere else where they can both be both to protect our children and maybe to help those folks who are the perpetrators. So again, I want to just pass that on, to your folks. I just have so much respect for the heroic job you guys do. For the listeners, again, missingkids.com, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, the cyber tip line, cybertipline.com, and the NetSmarts 411 program, which is NetSmarts, that's SMARTZ 411.org. Tremendous resources. Chuck and the Internet Safety Podcast strongly and heartily endorse the material that you've got there. Just tremendously valuable for whether you're a teacher, a church leader, a parent, and you're dealing with kids who need access to that information. Tremendous resources. Go there and be enlightened. So, John, again, thank you for taking the time to be with us on the program.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. It was my pleasure.
Listening to the Mind and Heart Show with your host, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier. The Mind and Heart Show is heard every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The number in the studio is 434-817-9470.
And we're back. Quick check of the weather. The temperature's rising a little bit this morning, so we're at 40 degrees now and sunny. And we're looking for a high today of 55 degrees, so bundle up. So we just listened to a podcast from one of the folks from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Again, that website, which is full of valuable information, is Missing Kids, one word, missingkids.com, so check that out. Just a couple of announcements before we have some wrap-up comments. Following our show coming up next at 10 o'clock is Straight Talk with Andra Hakes. She's a local attorney and deals with all matters of legal issues and LGBT legal issues. So be sure and stay tuned for Andra's show coming up at the top of the hour. Next week, I'm very pleased to have a guest who will be joining us by phone from Northern Virginia, Mary Vandeventer, who is a clinical social worker, who's also an expert in workplace violence. And we will be talking about workplace violence and some of the recent crises around the country. She's got good insights about that, so please join us next week for our show, which will deal with all the issues of workplace violence and school violence. So as we just heard on the podcast, lots of issues as parents to think about with kids, all the kinds of exploitation that can occur with kids, and how the bottom line here is critically important, is that you as parents, we as parents, know what our kids are doing online, look over their shoulder, so to speak, really monitor it. Because if you don't, they're going to succumb to peer pressure and they're going to be getting involved in either cyberbullying or sexting or talking to strangers online and so forth. So it's very important to be on top of that situation and to monitor what your kids are doing. there are a number of programs that one can get, NetNanny and the like, to filter content coming into your child's computer. But just know that those are not foolproof. They're not. They can be hacked. Kids are very savvy at working around them. And keep in mind also that your kids have internet access on their smartphone. So it's not unlikely that they could also be accessing websites on their phone. I've certainly had cases in the past of that. And also taking pictures, sending pictures using their phone. So keeping kids safe on the internet is not just about their laptop or their desktop computer. It's also very much about their phone and their tablet, since all of those technologies now can easily access the internet. But there's so many sites, protective sites, but go to the missingkids.com site. Go to the just Google web filter sites, and you can see there's all kinds of technology out there available, some free, some to purchase, to put on kids' computers. Bottom line, though, is you need to be involved. You need to be, if you don't know how to check a history, history just tells what websites the person has been to recently. It's a good idea to get in and do that periodically, just to see where they're going, since you can't be with them constantly. I mean, computers are incredibly important, and the internet's incredibly important academically and for them to have access to resources for their education. But there's the dark side, too, and we just want everybody to be smart and careful about that. I recall that one of the detectives with the Albemarle County Police Department, with whom I'm acquainted, I worked with those folks in the city, police officers for a number of years, told me that when they are monitoring internet traffic for potential predators, that they get so many bites, so many people responding when they're pretending to be an adolescent girl, that they just have to pick and choose who they will go after. There's just way too many people trying to meet that person for them to possibly manage them all, arrest them all, and convict them all. So it's very real. There's lots of people out there, very unsavory folks that you do not want talking to your child or trying to solicit photographs from your child or set up a meeting with your child. So please, it's important that we keep our eyes open, that we're not naive about this possibility. And many of us like to think, gee, my child would never do such a thing, but it's surprising sometimes how many kids have gotten themselves in hot water. You know, if you can password protect all the computers in your home, including theirs, you can then limit access. I know that can be a little cumbersome, but again, the bottom line is to be involved, to stay involved with your child's internet use and with their smartphone use. Kids literally live on their computers, live on their phones these days, you know, between messaging and texting and Facebook and Twitter and all the other ways that they can communicate, texting probably being the primary one. You really need to be aware of what kind of interaction they're having with their peers. So you're listening to The Mind and Heart Show on WPVC 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We're here every Saturday morning from 9 to 10. And talking about all matters of the mind and heart. I am joined in the studio by my producer, Kevin Chapman, who's keeping things running smoothly, and we're grateful for that. Another quick check of the weather. It is 40 degrees now and sunny in Charlottesville. We're looking for a high of 55. No chance of precipitation today, so it'll be a sunny but cool day. Nice day to get outside and enjoy these last few days of fall before we get hit full face with winter. A couple other announcements. If you are an organization that wants to have us do a public service announcement for you, if you're hosting an event you'd like the 94.7 audience to know about, send it at least a week in advance to WPVC, 255 Zan Road, Charlottesville, Virginia, 22901. That's 255 Zan, Z-A-N Road, Charlottesville, 22901. Or you can also go to our website, 947-WPVC.org and click on the link having to do with a public service announcement. We're always looking for volunteers for the station, people to come in and run the board and do other jobs. It's a great bunch of folks that I've gotten to know here. It's a lot of fun. So if you have some time, if you're interested in radio, again, go to our website, 947-WPVC.org, and you can send us a message about your interest in volunteering on the show. And then finally, we are a nonprofit. We're dependent upon our underwriters and our listeners. So please keep us in mind. If you're enjoying our show every week, it's because of the support of folks like you. And we don't want to have fund drives and annoy you about that, but we would encourage you to go to the website, 947-WPVC.org, and make a contribution to help us stay on the air with our show and the other shows that we offer during the week. So, closing thoughts about keeping your kids safe. Just know what's out there. Be alert to it. Know that the internet can be a dangerous place. Encourage your kid to maintain their privacy, not to give out information, name, phone number, email address, any of that online. To only interact with friends and acquaintances, not with strangers that may try to involve them in an online communication. To know that there are legal consequences if they engage in so-called sexting, sending inappropriate pictures from their phone of themselves or others. I've certainly had involved with cases in the past where that was a huge problem. So that is, and then, of course, what I said earlier, which is, as parents, be involved. Know what your kid's doing. Monitor their computer usage. Monitor their smartphone usage. Know what's going on out there, because I think many of us that are older don't really fully understand the degree of sophistication of a lot of young people when it comes to technology, and they really can run circles around us. So just be savvy, just be smart. So we're getting ready to sign off here. And coming up at the top of the hour in just a minute or so will be Straight Talk with Andra Hakes regarding legal issues and the like. We will be back next week, Saturday morning of next week at 9, when our guest will be Mary Vandeventer, a clinical social worker in Northern Virginia who is an expert on workplace violence. And we look forward to having her join us for what should be an interesting conversation. So have a good week. Stay safe. And we will be back next week. Thanks.